Everybody knows it. Toyota trucks are the stuff of legends. Rugged, durable, everlasting, Toyota makes trucks that just don't quit. And now, Toyota is driving that legacy toward the future with two of their most powerful trucks ever, the new Tundra and the all-new Tacoma.
In a half-ton Tundra, you can rule the roads from the comfort of a spacious cabin with connected tech and plenty of hauling power. The Tundra is ready to work hard and play even harder.
Or check out the all-new 24 Tacoma, redesigned and electrified to maximize your adventure. With a bevy of available off-road driving and power transfer modes, you will effortlessly crush the conditions. And with the Tacoma's reimagined interior, you'll do it in style.
And right now, your local Toyota dealer has more vehicles in stock and is making delivery on new vehicles almost every day.
So don't wait. Buy a Tundra or Tacoma today. Visit buyatoyota.com for deals and more.
Toyota, let's go places.
Welcome to the Fantasy Baseball Today podcast from CBS Sports.
High drive, center field, hit the wall, grand slam. This is magnificent.
Got a fantasy question? Email fantasybaseball@cbsi.com. Get ready to win your league.
Where fantasy becomes reality.
Now, here's Frank, Scott, Chris, and Adam.
It's Alec Manoa time. Welcome into Fantasy Baseball Today. Frank Sample joined by Scotty Dubs, Scott White, and CPT, Chris Towers. Have a fun show planned for you today. We'll hit Manoa here at the top. Blue Jays top pitching prospect, arguably, I guess, with Nate Pearson now, though. I've seen him move ahead of him in some prospect circles, making his debut on Wednesday. How should you value Christian Yelich? I feel like he's one of the weirdest players right now, so we'll talk about that. Should you sell high on your Blue Jays hitters, dynasty trade targets, Monday stuff, and a whole bunch more? What's up, guys?
You said we're going to hit Alec Manoa. That would make us pretty much the first people to do that in 2021. So plus, that'd be pretty impressive if we did.
If we tried to hit Alec Manoa, I'm pretty sure he would just like choke slam all of us because
there is no...
He's a large dude.
He's a big boy.
He's large and in charge.
I wouldn't be willing to stand in the box against him. No way. Like, I wouldn't even be able to see those pitches. And also, he has 7 hit-by-pitches this season, including spring training. I don't want any part of that, man. I don't want part
someone
who throws high 90s and is hitting dudes.
That's like the only way he puts runners on is he hits them with pitches.
Yeah, I got soft skin. You know, I moisturize. I can't be getting hit by pitches.
You look like someone who moisturizes quite a bit,
definitely
Chris.
Not. I'm worried. You know, I got the bags under the eyes. I'm trying to take care of my look.
Yeah, well, when you go to sleep at 3 or 4 a.m. every night, it's bound to happen. All right, let's talk about him. Alec Manoa, one of the Blue Jays' top prospects and arguably one of the top pitching prospects in baseball. I've been listening to more Dynasty content now around the industry, and we had the Welsh on recently to talk about prospects, and he said Manoa's moved up there along with Logan Gilbert, who's already in the majors. I know James Anderson from RotoWire, who covers Dynasty and prospects. He now has Alec Manoa as his top pitching prospect in the minors, but the minors no long. He will make his debut on Wednesday against the Yankees, which is funny because he pitched 5 shutout innings against the Yankees in spring training with 11 strikeouts to 0 walks. First round pick in 2019, Alec Manoa was big boy, 6'6", 260 pounds. I'll let you guys break down everything else. Scott, what is your expectations for Alec Manoa? He's 58% rostered. Is he a must add in fantasy baseball?
I'm pretty close. You know, we were getting, when we were tweeting about him getting called up Wednesday, we were getting, oh, should I drop this guy for him? And we said no a lot. So, you know, pitching being pretty plentiful right now in those shallower leagues, you may not have a spot for him. I imagine somebody in your league does. It's just not the somebody who's tweeting at us. We've gotten burned here a lot really since the start of 2020 by prospect call-ups. I feel like there was a stretch beginning, a multi-year stretch beginning. I don't know if it was around the time Mike Trout got called up or around the time like Carlos Correa got called up, where basically every big prospect who got called up, not literally, but you know, a very high success rate of those guys coming up and delivering impact numbers right away. In the last 2 years, okay, really, we're just talking 3 months, right? 2020 and 2021. most of the big prospects who've gotten called up haven't done that right away. There's been Cabrian Hayes, there's been Ian Anderson, but there have been a lot more misses than hits. And I don't know if it means anything. Maybe it's just an unlucky stretch, but it makes me a little more hesitant to go all in on these guys. But I will say, Alek Manoah, I'm feeling better about him than Logan Gilbert personally. It's been a meteoric rise up the prospect rankings here. Who did you say had him as his number one pitching prospect now, Frank?
That was James Anderson from RotoWire.
Okay, because we were just talking before the show. I didn't have Manoah even in my top 100 prospects coming into the season. Baseball America didn't have him in its top 100 prospects. MLB Pipeline didn't have him in its top 100 prospects.
Blue Jays number 8 prospect in Baseball Prospectus and Fangraphs.
Yeah. Now, he was amazing in spring training, as I pointed out when I talked about him earlier this week, and I think that's really what caused everybody to move him up. You mentioned what he did specifically against the Yankees. Overall, 7 innings, 15 strikeouts, no walks. I think it was just one hit allowed, right, in those 7 innings. And then you look at what he's done in the minors, 27 strikeouts in 18 innings, only 3 walks, 7 hits. I wasn't joking when I say the main way he puts runners on is hitting them by pitches, because there's so few hits and walks allowed. Big guy, big fastball. The slider is great. Apparently, he studied like Dellin Betances' slider through the Pitching Ninja account, because he's like, I'm a big guy like him. Maybe that's how I should learn a slider. And he also studied like Chris Sale and developed a really good slider from doing that. And I don't know exactly when that happened in his development. He's made all of 9 professional starts so far, not counting spring training. So, you know, I think just the not seeing him much is why he was left off so many prospect rankings. But the point is, he's looked really good in every context this season. And suddenly he's coming up. So we'll see how it goes. But there's obviously, I think he will stay if he's not a disaster.
I think part of the rise for Manoah in prospect rankings right now is the fact that the top pitching prospects coming into this year, outside of Logan Gilbert, who was very good in the minors, and that's why he was called up, Mackenzie Gore has not been good in the minors this year. He's really struggled with repeating his delivery and control thus far. Matt Manning has been giving up a ton of home runs for the Tigers. So I think just by the process of elimination, these guys taking a little bit of a step back, Alek Manoah, what he's done has been able to rise up some prospect boards. And I thought that your point, Scott, about prospects recently not performing, not a very high success rate, makes a lot of sense, because if you look at last year and this year, I mean, these guys have been playing at alternate training sites. They haven't really been playing in the minors. And I think it makes sense that, you know, like, we haven't really talked about this in general, but it makes sense that prospects aren't hitting at the same rate they did before, because they have lost so much development time in the minors.
I can't simulate real game competition.
Exactly.
Like, that's just like, it doesn't matter how close you can have an umpire out there and you can get a manager tossed from a game in a simulator. Mm-hmm. Like, you can do all these things to simulate, but the fact of the matter is, you're dealing with guys that you've been practicing against, guys who've been seeing you every single day for weeks. There's just it's not the same thing. And so, I think that makes perfect sense.
And I think what happened last year is the timeline got accelerated on so many, because we saw a lot of prospects called up during a 2-month span. It was like, let's get in 6 months worth of prospect call-ups in 2 months, guys.
Yeah.
And, but, you know, even I'm even thinking like Nate Pearson, who seemed like as finished a product as it kind of seems like Alek Manoah is now. I don't know that I make anything of it. I just thought it was worth pointing out that it feels like we've gotten burned a lot more by these guys recently than we have, I don't know, in the past 5-6 years. I've been doing this long enough that I remember, like, the standard trajectory for a prospect used to be he gets called up. You expect he needs a lot of on-the-job development. It's going to be a couple years before he really meets his upside. But that is a long-term, in the past few years.
That's a long-term trend. You know, that is, there's been a lot of research done to suggest that, you know, the last couple of seasons aside, I haven't seen whether that's changed, but generally speaking, players are really good earlier now than they ever have been, which is, you know, a testament to developmental standards that have changed and just teams investing more in the minor league developmental process. You know, with Manoah, it's really interesting, because, like we were mentioning, he wasn't necessarily this can't miss prospect coming into the season. And you read about him, and he spent multiple years working mostly as a reliever in college at West Virginia. Became a starter in 2019 as a 21-year-old, had an awesome season. Really big dude, 6'6", 260 pounds, what he's listed at. And there's been a lot of concern about him as a prospect about whether he would end up being able to hold up as a starter just because of, you know, one, his size, whether he'd be able to go max effort for 6 or 7 innings, and also just his repertoire. He was a fastball slider guy coming in. He apparently has developed the changeup to the point where it's considered a viable pitch. He made one start in front of the Statcast cameras in spring training. It was against the Yankees. He threw 44 pitches. 7 of them were changeups. He got one swinging strike. So, you know, not necessarily overpowering there, but 5 whiffs on 11 sliders, 3 whiffs on 20 fastballs. Average 95.5 with the fastball, 2468 average spin rate. That is really, really high. So it could be a high whiff slider. One thing I will point out, this was the Yankees starting lineup. Tauchman, Voit, Bruce, Frazier, Dietrich, Higashioka, Wade, Estrada, and Greg Allen. Not exactly their best starting 9, although I guess like 3 or 4 of those guys are currently starting for them now because a lot of things have gone wrong for the Yankees. But I don't know. It's weird. We just don't have a lot to go on here. You know, it's really hard to make a statistical case either way about a player who's thrown 35 innings as a professional.
Yep.
And I do think I do think the part that we need to mention there, and what's going to be the biggest drawback to Manoah, even if he's awesome, is that there's going to be a limit on how much they can use him. Like it's that he's been going 6 innings at AAA suggests to me he'll probably be going 6 innings in the majors to start out. But like that means there's going to be a hard cutoff at some point.
Yeah. And his pitch counts were 81, 76, and 94.
No, yeah, maybe. Oh, maybe maybe he won't even go 6 then.
Yep. Real quick, let's put a bow on this conversation, but how much fab would you guys spend in a 12-team league on him and how much in a 15-teamer?
20-ish percent in a 12-team, 25 in a 15-teamer if I need pitching.
Okay. So basically as aggressive as you were being with Logan Gilbert, Chris.
Yeah, it seems like the upside may be higher for Manoah.
I'll throw a few names your way. You tell me if you would drop them for Manoah. Madison Bumgarner.
I don't think I would.
I think I would, but I don't think it's like a must-do.
If it was like a 10-teamer, I might do it just to go. But otherwise, I don't think I would.
Anthony DeSclafani, who allowed 10 earned runs on Sunday.
Yeah.
Yeah.
How about Matthew Boyd?
Absolutely.
Yeah.
How about Logan Gilbert?
Yeah.
Yeah, no. Probably. It's kind of dumb. I agree. Like he was the guy we were all excited about. He's made 2 starts and now we're like, next guy. This is like classic like prospecting. But
that's
I guess
the way you gotta play it sometimes.
Yeah, you do. Yeah, that's exactly the case.
Especially just, in shallower redraft leagues, right? Yeah. Which, you know, a lot of the time is what we're talking about. But look, if you have Logan Gilbert in a deeper league, you hold him, obviously you have him in a keeper or dynasty league, like we're not completely fading Gilbert anymore. It's just, you know, in shallower redraft, you could be more aggressive with these moves. Let's take a look at some Monday standouts.
Oh my goodness gracious.
How about you get us started here, Chris?
Yeah. When we do this segment, it's always like, oh, this starting pitcher had 21 swinging strikes and 12 strikeouts. And it's like, you know, hitters count 2 guys and they can have big games and we can talk about them too. So let's talk about a guy who has been one of the most pleasant surprises in baseball, Joey Wendell. It has just been an absolute joy on the teams where I added Joey Wendell early on to have him on my team because he's the one hitter who's just been good all season in the entire league. He went, 3 for 4 today? 3 for 6? Scott, what was it? At least 3 hits in 4 of his last 8 games.
That's awesome exactly it
so far this season. He's hitting over 300 now. And it's really been very consistent. There was a stretch in late April, early May where he was a little off, but for the most part, he's been hitting right around 280, 290, 300 for every stretch of the season. Yeah, 3 for 4, hit his 6th home run, 4 RBI today. hitting 310 now. I don't think Joey Wendell's a superstar. I don't think he's going to keep posting a 916 OPS, but he puts the bat on the ball. He's hit at least, was it 280 in three of the last four seasons? Yeah, 286 in four of the last five now. I think Joey Wendell's just pretty good. I don't think he's a star, but he's got speed. He could steal 15 to 20 bases. He could hit for a high average. Yay, Joey Wendell. Way to go.
Scott, your oh my goodness gracious player from Monday.
Austin Gomber. Ooh. Is Austin Gomber good? There's more reason to believe he is. So it doesn't look like this two-start recommendation is going to be a disaster this time. He kicked off the week in fine fashion. Best start of the season, actually. Eight innings, two earned runs allowed, no walks, eight strikeouts, 18 swinging strikes. That's a season high. I didn't check to see if it was a career high, but it wouldn't surprise me. 18 swinging strikes, nine on the slider, which was his third most used pitch, actually. It seems like he's turned the corner here in May, and specifically with the walks. In five May starts, he's issued three total walks. In five April starts, it was 19 walks. So that's pretty much all the difference right there. But 2.97 ERA in those five May starts. About a 13% swinging strike rate, which is really good. So he's showing more skill than I feel like he ever should with the Cardinals. Obviously, there's the big issue of where he plays his home games. But he might be... I know John Gray's been pretty good this year, but I kind of feel like Austin Gomber is the most attractive Rockies pitcher right now, and I'm including Germán Márquez in that mix, who I actually just dropped in a 15-team league. Mm.
Austin Gomber, worth mentioning, I don't want to take anything away from him, but going up against the Mets lineup, which is just completely lost right now, more bad news on Monday that Conforto and Jeff McNeil are going to miss another month. They're not expected back until late June at the earliest. So it's not a good lineup. They're 27th and weighted on base average in May.
You're being far too kind when you say it's not a good lineup.
It's very bad.
This is right now the Mets lineup today was not major league caliber. They had Jonathan Villar, Francisco Lindor, James McCann playing first base for the first time as a professional. Actually made a really nice play.
He did.
On the first batted ball he saw. Dominic Smith, so the top four are all major league players. Thomas Nito, Jose Peraza, Cameron Maben, Joshenwi Fargas, who was replaced by Khalil Lee, who did strike out again. Yeah, this was one of the worst lineups a starting pitcher is likely to face.
It's very bad.
And to give it more context, since I said he's the most usable Rockies pitcher, like Gomber or Manoa? Definitely Manoa. Yeah,
I don't think any Rockies pitcher is in the top 60 right now. Maybe not the top 70.
All right, my oh my goodness gracious player from Monday, Blake Snell. Man, what is going on with Blake Snell at the Brewers, which is supposed to be a pretty good matchup itself. No Christian Yelich in the lineup either, although Kesson Hero is back. We'll talk about that in a little bit. 3 2/3, five earned runs, did have seven strikeouts, three more walks for Blake Snell. The swinging strikes were fine. They were actually very good, 18 on 81 pitches, but he has gone less than five innings in three of his last four starts. And I noticed coming into the start, his first pitch strike percentage, his chase rate, his swinging strike rate are all four-year lows for Blake Snell. He's up to 5.5 walks per nine, which is by far a career high. 4.50 ERA, 1.52 whip for Blake Snell. I kind of just want to marry him to Luis Castillo in the rankings and just have them follow each other around and hopefully if one gets better, the other one will get better. But I'm just going to keep lowering both of them until they show me something, because yes, Blake Snell went six his last time out. Sure, that was a great start, but he's just not right now. Like, Blake Snell's not right, and I don't think you should be starting him.
Yeah, I have more hope for Luis Castillo, actually, to become the impactful pitcher we drafted him to be. I think Blake Snell has a lot of raw ability. I just don't think he's going to tame it. I think there was that one magical year where he did, and we don't have a lot of evidence since then that he can be efficient enough, and it actually seems like he's headed the wrong direction. So I don't know. I mean, Blake Snell kind of seems like Dylan Cease right now, except even Cease, I think I wonder if he's more likely to take a step forward to becoming something bigger.
That's actually a really good comp right now. They're both getting a ton of swinging strikes, good strikeouts, but they walk a lot of batters. So I'm not going to lower Blake Snell, you know, that far in the rankings yet, but I do think that you can leave him on your bench for the time being until he figures it out. Because
I'll just point out that, like, before the most recent 9 starts, the entire world was screaming at Kevin Cash for being such an idiot for taking out a stud pitcher like Blake Snell in the 6th inning. So, you know,
he has upside. He has all the upside in the world, Chris. I won't argue that. I think he's a great pitcher when he's on, which he was in the playoffs. He had everything working. And when he has all 4 of his pitches working, I think he's probably one of the most unhittable pitchers in baseball. But right now, that is not working. That is not the case for Blake Snell. So he's got to get things figured out. I think you leave him on your bench for the time being. After a season full of drama and excitement, a Europa League champion will be crowned on Wednesday, May 26th. European juggernauts Manchester United are looking to make room in their crowded trophy cabinet for yet another addition. Meanwhile, Spain's Villarreal are competing in their first ever European final as they look to write their name in the history books and secure a spot in next season's Champions League. You can watch the match via Paramount Plus in the CBS Sports app. And for those of you wondering about the Champions League final on Saturday, yep, you can watch it at the exact same way via Paramount Plus in the CBS Sports app. All right, some news and notes from Monday. Byron Buxton could begin a rehab assignment by the end of the week if he's able to run without any issues. We had a ton of Padres news. Trent Grisham was placed on the IL with a bruised heel. Manny Machado has now missed 4 straight with right shoulder tightness. Denelson Lamet will start on Friday. He's been used in relief the past few outings, though his velocity has not bounced back yet. So I still don't think there is
it hasn't bounced all the way back, but it's been better in relief.
Fair enough. For the Mets, Pete Alonso was expected to have a short stay on the IL. Carlos Carrasco might not be ready until July, which is weird considering he was built up to 6 innings in a sim game in early May. But maybe he suffered a setback and they're just kind of keeping it under wraps, not letting anyone know. But yeah, more bad news there on Carrasco. Jeff McNeil and Conforto mentioned their hamstring strains are both significant and expected to keep them out until late June. Some Marlins news. Eliezer Hernandez pitched 4 scoreless frames at AAA on Sunday. He allowed 2 hits and no walks while striking out 8. He'll likely make 1 more rehab start before being activated next week. Starling Marte will start a rehab assignment on Tuesday. Sixto Sanchez will throw a bullpen session on Tuesday. Jorge Alfaro was reinstated. Bryce Harper was out of the lineup for a 2nd straight day, though manager Joe Girardi said it wasn't injury-related. Right, we believe you, Joe Girardi. Keston Hiura was recalled by the Brewers with a few lefties on the schedule against the Padres. He finished 1-for-3 with a single, walk, run scored, and 2 more strikeouts. Where should Keston Hiura be rostered, if anywhere? He's 48% rostered right now.
I've held on to him in 15-team leagues. I think I might have dropped him in 12 teamers that I have. There might be 1 left, but I think that's probably it. Like, I'll write about him in the waiver wire column tonight, and you're just kind of hoping that here's the script. Rougned Odor, when he first got called up, was a big time prospect, struggled, got sent back down, and then came back, I think, in 2016 or 2015 and really took off and was a really good fantasy option. That's what you're hoping for. I think it was in 2016. He got sent down early on and was really good from then on. Something like that.
Yep. I could see it in a 12-team roto league or deeper where you have a middle infielder if you need help in that spot. Still think he has some power, speed, potential, batting average. Probably going to be on the lower side. But as we mentioned on yesterday's podcast, he was hitting well in the minors. He was just still striking out quite a bit. Again, the name there, Keston Hiura. Jesus Luzardo is beginning a rehab assignment on Thursday and could initially return as a reliever for the A's. Giancarlo Stanton took batting practice on Sunday and could return on Tuesday for the Yankees. Wilson Ramos was placed on the IL with a lumbar spine strain. Both Nelson Cruz and Jorge Polanco remained out on Monday, though I was watching that game in the background. I believe Polanco came on as a pinch runner, which is good news because he's dealing with an ankle injury. Phillies pitching prospect Spencer Howard will indeed make another start this week against the Marlins. Carson Kelly was reinstated for the D-backs, and Dalton Varsho was optioned back to AAA. Ty France was activated on Monday. He was playing first base and batting 6th for the Mariners. Brian Anderson left Monday's game with left shoulder soreness. Some other prospect updates, not named Alek Manoah. Joe Adell has 5 home runs over his last 4 games, but still has a 35% strikeout rate at AAA. So I think they're going to remain patient until he makes more contact.
Hey, the Brewers called Hero back up despite that kind of strikeout rate at AAA.
Yeah,
it's true. For what it's worth, over that 5-game stretch, his strikeout rate is only 21%. It's a 5-game stretch, so it doesn't really mean anything. But
Adell, he's hitting the ball
incredibly well overall.
Yeah,
you're talking about Adell.
Joe Adell.
Adell, yes.
Yep.
Yeah, okay.
Adley Rutschman is only batting .246, but has 4 home runs with a 21% walk rate at AA. What I found most interesting is that he has started 5 of 17 games at first base, which, if this is part of his long-term fantasy value, that he's going to play first base when he's not catching, that could be absolutely massive for Adley Rutschman's value. So I just thought that was interesting and worth mentioning. Red Sox prospect Tristan Casas is batting .328 with 4 home runs at AA. He's hitting very well there. And Braves pitching prospect Tucker Davidson, who was here last week, not here on the podcast, but he was with the Braves.
In my apartment, actually. We were hanging out. We got drinks.
Yeah, they were listening to some Taylor Swift albums, and it was great. Tucker Davidson, he threw a quality start last week against the Mets. He struck out 9 over 6 innings of 1-run ball in his latest AAA start on Sunday. We're going to take a quick break, but when we return, how should you be valuing Christian Yelich right now, both in redraft and dynasty? I think it's very interesting. We'll talk about it next here on Fantasy Baseball Today.
Shopify's already taken the cash register online, helping millions sell billions around the world. But did you know that Shopify can do the same thing at your retail store? Give your point of sale system a serious upgrade with Shopify. That's right. Shopify is the sound of selling everywhere, online, in-store, on social media, and beyond. With Shopify, you get a powerhouse selling partner that effortlessly unites your in-person and online sales into one source of truth. Track every sale across your business in one place and know exactly what's in stock. With Shopify POS, you can accept credit cards, mobile payments, and every other major payment method, all with low fees and transparent pricing, starting on day one. Plus, Shopify's award-winning help is there to support your success every step of the way. Do retail right with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/MLB podcast, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/MLB podcast to take your retail business to the next level today. shopify.com/MLB podcast.
MTV's official Challenge podcast is back for another season.
And so are we.
I'm Tori Deal.
And I'm Anissa Ferreira.
The wait is over, guys. All Stars 4 is finally here.
And this season takes it to a whole new level. Old school legends, modern power players, and ex-lovers are all competing in Cape Town, South Africa for the prize of $300,000.
And we're going to be right here along with you fans, covering every episode on the podcast.
Listen to MTV's official Challenge podcast wherever you get your podcasts.
So Christian Yelich returned last week, and since then he has sat 2 of 6 games. He was out on Monday against a lefty in Blake Snell. He also was the designated hitter for the 2 games that were in Kansas City. I don't think this guy is anywhere close to healthy. And I think you see it in his production or lack thereof for Christian Yelich. He has a 35% strikeout rate on the season, including 8 more strikeouts in 19 plate appearances since returning from the IL. Now, he did go 2 for 4 with a home run on Sunday. I believe that game was in Cincinnati. So a good park to hit in. Not going to take anything away from him, but maybe you use something like that if he strings a few games like this together just to try and sell Christian Yelich to get something in return. Maybe he plays the rest of the year. I mean, this kind of came back to bite me already once, literally, with Fernando Tatis biting a hat, eating a hat. But I just don't think Christian Yelich is healthy, and I think this back injury is something that is chronic, and it's going to continue to hamper him. So what do you guys think?
I think it depends on where your team is. I think if you're in first place, trading Christian Yelich probably makes a lot of sense because when you're already ahead right now, you probably want to start minimizing some of your risk and you want to start looking for, you know, making sure that there are fewer ways for your season to go wrong. But if you're in like 10th place and drafting Christian Yelich was a significant part of that, I don't think you're likely to get anyone back who could have helped propel you up the standings quicker than a healthy right Christian Yelich would. Now, maybe you just specifically target other guys who are off to terrible starts, but I think if you if you need a long shot play, hanging on to Yelich is probably the right move.
What do you guys think that you can get for Christian Yelich right now?
Well, that's what I was going to ask, because I've kept him in my top 10 outfielders in my rest of season rankings. And, you know, we just talked last week about I kind of had the first two rounds of a draft would look like if we were drafting from now for the rest of the season. And I had Yelich with the last pick there of round two. Although, I mean, I said I didn't feel great about it. I'm with you in that. I don't really know. This is a head scratcher situation, because I agree that what's wrong with him is probably health and back issues can really linger. They can linger forever. You know, Todd Helton became a different player because of back issues for the second half of his career. And I'm not going to say that's what's going to happen to Yelich. I just don't know. And but we also know what the upside looks like. The upside is arguably the best player in baseball.
Yeah.
So,
and I still think he has that upside.
Yeah.
To be clear, he's crushed the ball over the last couple of seasons, just like he did at his very best. Yep. It's just
right.
He hasn't made as much contact, and he hasn't been on the field.
That's why it's such a risk-reward situation, right? Because there's like kind of a fork in the road, right, with Christian Yelich right now, where he can go on to, okay, you know, they're slow playing it right now with him, and maybe over the next couple of weeks, he actually does legitimately get back on track, and he's healthy. And he performs like one of the top five hitters the rest of the season. That is within his range of outcomes. Yeah. Or he can tweak his back and he could be shut down for the next 2 months, right?
Like I do think I probably need to move him out of the top 10 outfielders. If I was redoing that exercise today, redrafting for the rest of the season, I probably should leave him out. Because, you know, I think about some of the outfielders I have behind him, like Nick Castellanos. Like, would I honestly trade Nick Castellanos for Christian Yelich? I can't see myself doing that. I don't know exactly where the line. Aaron Judge.
So I lowered him. I lowered him.
I'd rather have Judge.
Yeah.
Than Castellanos.
Well, I wouldn't. But
do still have Yelich slightly ahead. But I have no way of like I can't. Yeah, I have to move him down. But
right, like because I think that's what the exercise should be. Should I trade this outfielder for him? And outfield's pretty weak, so you probably don't have to go that far down the rankings before, like Jared Walsh or Christian Yelich.
I'd much rather
still take Yelich.
Exactly. Yeah.
Yeah.
You know what I think would be interesting if you had Jesse Winker, right? Like that's the ultimate sell high situation to try and
and I would do that.
Give yourself a boost rest of season, like trading away Winker to get Yelich. Winker has a ton of injury risk himself based on his history, obviously. So
I don't think I'd do that if my team's already great, though. Like, maybe that's where the line is. Like, I probably have Winker, or I probably will have Winker and Walsh probably right next to each other in my rankings, and I might slot Yelich right in between the two.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Do you think you can get Kyle Tucker for Christian Yelich right now?
I don't think there's any way.
Yeah, no. You think that ship is sailed?
Maybe 3 weeks ago you could have, but I don't think so right now. I think if you were going to move Christian Yelich, I would be looking for Marcell Ozuna plus or Francisco Lindor plus. I don't know if I could do that, but that would be what I would be looking for. Would be buying low on another player who someone is probably frustrated in, who doesn't have either, in Ozuna's case, doesn't have the name cachet that Yelich does, but who I feel very confident will be good moving forward. Or Lindor, I think there's probably, given the dominance of New York people in sports media, I think there's probably a heightened sense of Lindor's struggles. So I think you might be able to get Lindor plus for Yelich, but I think in either of those cases, if it came down to Lindor or Ozuna for Yelich, I would probably do them. I'm more confident in those guys turning it around than I am Yelich.
I think I would still want plus. I agree. Like, I would want Ozuna plus, or even LeMahieu is one that comes to mind, right? Like LeMahieu plus to get Christian Yelich right now.
I don't think LeMahieu's a top 50 overall player right now.
Not right now, but I mean,
we like moving forward, rest of season. I don't think I view him. I'm not sure he'd be in my top 70 right now.
Yankee hater, man. I think in Dynasty, it's probably exacerbated even more, right? Because it's probably just like, what's the state of your team? But
no, I think in Dynasty, Yelich has more value.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I feel like it would be even harder to pull, like, because obviously this back injury could be long term. We saw, I mean, Kershaw basically dealt with a serious back injury for years. Now he has returned to dominance. So maybe that is
Look. I mentioned Helton, Don Mattingly famously had his career ruined by back issue. Likely scenario.
I would be thrilled if Yelich followed the Kershaw career path if I had him in Dynasty. Like a couple of years where he was still an elite player, but only in 75% of the plate appearances, and then like put it all behind him. Like, that would be awesome. That's kind of a best case. And it, to be clear, Yelich hasn't suffered some kind of significant, you know, injury. It's not like he has a fractured vertebrae or, you know, he hasn't had to have surgery on his back, you know. So it also may all just be premature. Mm-hmm. And it might just be that he's beat up but not injured, you know.
Right. I would still bet on Yelich's career being several years in the future of him being a first round caliber player. I would still bet on that. I don't know what to expect for 2021. That's why I'm saying he still has more dynasty value. And actually I had this tested in a dynasty like league, that was drafting late basically last month. So a little bit's changed for Yelich since then, but Yelich was one of the most expensive players taken in free agency still. So, you know, almost like nothing had changed value-wise.
Yep, and let's stick with Dynasty here. We haven't talked about Dynasty in a while. It's a little bit of a lighter day here on the schedule. So I do want you guys to come up with a few potential trade targets, one to buy, one to sell in Dynasty right now. So Scott, I'll throw it your way first. One of each that you're looking for in Dynasty right now.
All right, well, so there was a reason, there's a reason Dylan Cease was top of mind for me, because he's my pick for a buy low in Dynasty League. I think he's so close to putting it all together. His stuff has rated, he a few starts ago, he basically, his stuff kind of turned a corner and he became the most lively fastball in baseball, the most, like the highest spin rate of anybody on both his fastball and slider, basically. And his swinging strike rate has been through the roof. His very last start, it wasn't very good, but he had 20 swinging strikes. That's two of his last three starts, 20 swinging strikes. Neither of them, the result was that great. But like, he's missing a ton of bats and his stuff is rating really well. In a way, it hadn't in the past, at least not as measured in the major leagues. So I think he's made strides here that haven't shown up in the stat line that clearly yet, but they're about to. And I think, you know, if you're dealing with someone, somebody who has Cease who doesn't know that, there's a chance you could get him. This might be your last chance to get him at a discount.
Fair enough. How about one that you're looking to sell?
Yeah, so kind of coming up with that on the fly, I had thought about maybe Adolis Garcia, just because he's starting to get, even me yesterday saying I'm starting to believe in him more. I saw a poll from Chris Welsh on Twitter today. Who would you rather have rest of season, Jesse Winker or Adolis Garcia? And Winker won by a pretty substantial margin, as he should have, but just that somebody in the community was felt like that question needed to be asked. And I think it's easy to overlook just how old Garcia is. He's 28. So there's not much of a future here, assuming he can maintain this from year to year in the first place. And, you know, I feel pretty good about him maintaining close to this in 2021, but next year all bets are off again. So yeah, I'll go with him as my sell high.
Chris, one to buy and one to sell in Dynasty right now?
Yeah, one to buy. I mean, I'll stick on brand and say Luis Castillo.
I honestly, I know that we talk about him all the time, but I think that this is, if you believe in him, which Chris, you basically have until you lowered him yesterday, there is no better time. Like, if you believe in him getting back to like that top 15 starting pitcher, which he has been for, you know, each of the past 2 or 3 years or close to it, there is no better time than to buy Luis Castillo right now in Dynasty.
Yeah, I kind of feel like Chris Paddock's in that category too, for what it's worth. And he's actually shown signs of turning the corner, but not in a way that's very loud.
Blake Snell's a little bit tougher because he's had the arm issues the past couple of years, but I mean, technically he is in that mold. One that you're looking to sell, Chris?
I want to say Trevor Rogers.
I thought about him.
I did trade him.
You're just saying that because you traded him to me.
I think Trevor Rogers is really awesome. I think he's an incredibly talented pitcher, but I'm not sure he's the future ace that he might be viewed as. But I'm more confident in calling Kevin Gausman a dynasty sell high or someone like that. Someone who is older. Gausman's not old, but he's 30. He's relatively established. I buy the changes he's made. I think he's good. But, you know, Joe Musgrove's another example of this where I'm not necessarily sure those guys are going to be great in 2022, 2023.
Oh, you bite your tongue, Chris. How dare you? How dare you besmirch the name of Joe Musgrove? Two buy candidates for me. Dominic Smith, I'm going to go back to the well. I liked him before the season. I don't think he's as bad as he's shown. The underlying numbers, the StatCast numbers for Dominic Smith, they have come down a little bit. But with the introduction of the Universal DH, we hope, starting next year and beyond, I think that's something that can help him stay on the field. And I do think... I don't think 2020 was just a complete fluke, so I would be buying Dominic Smith if you can get him on the cheap. A prospect, a name to remember, Roansy Contreras. He's a pitching prospect with the Pirates. He came over in the Jameson Taillon trade. He's barely ranked inside their top 20 prospects for the Pirates. He's 20 years old. He's pitching at AA, so I mean, that's already pretty advanced
for that level,
for a 20-year-old. He has 28 strikeouts to 3 walks across his first 3 starts and has looked lights out. Some potential.
I think he kind of figured out a breaking ball that he didn't have before. It was mostly just fastball changeup, and so the strikeout rate wasn't that good in previous stops. I think that's the story with Contreras. I wrote about him in the prospects report a couple weeks ago.
Nice. And some sell high candidates. I think Domingo Germán is one because he's not really young, and you know he's obviously had his fair share of issues, and he's kind of like threatened leaving the game of baseball multiple times already. And I mean, you might be able to just get like a Yankee tax on him in return. And I think that he, like, while the numbers are great, he's had some really great matchups recently as well.
Yeah, I think he's fine.
Yeah.
Like moving forward this year, long term, I don't think he has much dynasty value. I agree with you there.
Yeah, I mean, you would have to find someone who believes that, because I agree with you. I don't think he does. And any like old-ish starting pitcher, you brought up Kevin Gausman, Chris, but even to like a lesser extent, if you can get anything for these guys, I don't know if you can, but like Alex Wood, obviously, and Kyle Gibson, and names like that who are just overperforming. How about this one? Lance Lynn, who he had a very good start against the Cardinals on Monday. 7 innings, 1 run, 3 walks, 4 strikeouts. Okay, that's whatever. 15 swinging strikes on 104 pitches. The ERA is down to 1.51. The XFIP is up at 4.28, thanks to a 47% fly ball rate. In 5 starts since returning from the IL, Lance Lynn has just 23 strikeouts to 13 walks. So that's not really a great ratio. Any thoughts? I guess this is for redraft too, but I kind of think Lance Lynn is a good sell high in both.
This is who Lance Lynn is, though. Like, XFIP doesn't really mean anything for Lance Lynn. He's got a 393 career XFIP and a 351 ERA. And, like,
fair.
That was really true early on in his career when he was putting up pretty mediocre peripherals. Stayed true pretty much his whole career.
Like, it was very true last year.
And it was true in 2019, really.
Yeah.
You know, not to that extent, but
last year, I mean, the disparity between the 434 XFIP versus the 332 ERA, like that was one of the biggest conflicts between ERA and XFIP in all of baseball. And it's why I ranked Lynn pretty high, but I was a little reluctant to draft him. Since returning too, I don't know if this is a thing, but I feel like he's had bad strikeout luck because the whiffs have been there.
Yeah.
Just the strikeouts haven't been there.
And I'll just put like here's his xERA in the Statcast era. So going back to 2015, 338, 392, 403, 335, 328, 258.
So very good.
He's really good on contact. That's just, he's one of those guys.
Yep. Maybe this is my pitcher version of Chris Bryant, right? Where I just have the blinders on and I continue to look too much into the underlying numbers when like, just take the numbers at face value. Right. And these guys are both really good.
There's at some point with a track record like that and with a sample size as large as it, and just those stats, you know, the expected stats or FIP or all that stuff, like it works for nearly all players, but there are exceptions. A handful of players one way or the other who they just, for whatever reason, they don't fit quite by the rules that everyone else seems to play to.
Fair enough. Before we get to, I have this Blue Jays note that I want to talk about, but before we get to that, been some issues recently on Apple Podcasts. So just wanted to remind everyone that you can follow and stream this podcast, Fantasy Baseball Today and Fantasy Baseball Today in 5 on Spotify. Look, you've all heard of Spotify. You can go there. A lot of people use it for music. You can use it for podcasts as well. So make sure to, if you need to listen to the podcast without any issues recently, you can do so on Spotify. The note that I wanted to bring up about the Blue Jays, Vladimir Guerrero Jr., he had a double dong on Monday. He's now tied for the league lead in home runs. He has 15. He's awesome. Tied for second in RBI. He has 39. He's batting .333 with an 1104 OPS. The ground ball rate is up in May, 51%, but he is sixth in baseball in average exit velocity on fly balls and line drives, which helps mitigate ground balls, obviously. I wanted to bring this up because we didn't talk about it, but starting June 1st, the Blue Jays will go back to playing in Buffalo, which is Salem Field, which is where they played last year, which according to Park Factors, ranked 9th in runs and 27th in home runs. So far this year in Dunedin, where they are playing, that park ranks number 1 in Park Factors for runs and number 3 in home runs. The Blue Jays as a team have the highest OPS at home this season at .840. Vlad Jr., this was entering Monday's action, was batting .411 with a .1377 OPS in Dunedin. Bo Bichette was batting .310 with a .961 OPS in Dunedin. Just a .235 batting average with a .660 OPS on the road. So I just thought that I would bring it up because they are moving their home park to Buffalo again, starting on June 1st. So I don't know if you actually want to sell high on Vlad or Bo Bichette because it seems foolish, but I thought I would bring it up.
There wasn't much of a sample last year to really fairly assess Buffalo. I don't feel like the dimensions, I think, are pretty favorable. I think they're actually, they look pretty favorable to me. Like it seems like it should be a hitter friendly environment. So I don't know. I mean, could be wrong about that, but
Frank, you said it was 9th in runs.
Yes.
So I mean, we're talking about really, really small sample sizes. Typically, you want 3 years for park factors to kind of separate the noise out.
And to be fair, we're basically comparing the same time period from last season to this season. It's 2 months of baseball, so.
Yeah. Maybe there's something there. They do play 5 more games at home, I would think, than on the road moving forward. I would think, it'll play better than average. You know, it'll play better than the average road park or the median road park. So I don't think there's much actionable. I do think Bo Bichette might be a sell high candidate, but he's made me look real stupid on that one all year. So,
I don't think anyone wants to go out on a limb and take the stance of selling high on Vladimir Guerrero Jr. right now. That's just not somewhere you want to be. Some waiver wire hitters from Monday will start in shallower leagues. Andrew Vaughn went 2-for-3 with his 4th home run. He's homered now in back-to-back days. Both have come off of lefties, and he is actually hitting .290 with a .1081 OPS against lefties this season. Manuel Margot looks like he's heating back up. He went 2-for-6 with 3 RBI. And with his sixth steal of the season. Tommy Pham went 1-for-4 with his 2nd home run. The underlying numbers remain really good for him. It just hasn't really happened for him. And Avisail Garcia has now homered in back-to-back games. Vaughn, Margot, Pham, Garcia. Any interest in shallower-ish leagues?
Yeah, in FAM, I actually did pick him up in a 12-team roto league where he was dropped. It looks like he's slowly coming around. And I do like him more than Avisaíl García, who's the one I wanted to highlight here, because Avisaíl García's, his numbers look really good too. That was his fifth home run in May. He's batting over .320 for the month. Actually, if you go look at the site, you'll see I wrote an article about offense being up in May, and I have like a list of 40 hitters whose numbers have been way up in May versus April. So you can see them all side by side. Avisaíl García is on that list. And the expected stats is entering today an expected batting average of .275, expected slug of .499. That's both of those are significantly better than his actual numbers. He's a guy I liked a lot heading into last year, going to a really hitter-friendly environment. And I may have just been a year early on him because he's looking really good. And he's playing more consistently than it was at the start of the season, too.
And I think, like, the most likely outcome, I think, is probably just what he did in 2019. And he had 20 homers and 10 steals in 125 games while hitting .282. That's a must-start roto player.
Some hitters in deeper leagues. Brad Miller, who has four position eligibilities, who went 2-for-3 with what? A sock and a shoe. That's right. He's up to five home runs and 3 steals to this point for Brad Miller.
Love it.
He is 6% rostered. Amed Rosario now has 10 hits, including 2 steals over his last 6 games. Freddie Galvez has 8 hits with 2 homers over his last 6 games. And Trevor Larnach went 1-for-3 with his second home run of the season. Both of his home runs have been off of lefties, this time against John Means, 112 mile per hour exit velocity, 460 feet to straightaway center. So some real power there in the bat for Larnach.
He had 3 home runs off lefties in his minor league career and about 170 something plate appearances. So small sample size, but you know, we'll see.
I really don't get the lack of enthusiasm for him in fantasy, being only 17% rostered. He hasn't gotten off to a sizzling start. I get that, but he hasn't looked overmatched either. Like, you know, it's not like he's been striking out all the time.
Yeah.
And like he's a second tier prospect. You know, he's not Alex Kirilloff, but it was everybody's top 100 for the past 2 to 3 years. So like legit prospect here. I'm just surprised. I'm not saying he needs to be 80% rostered or anything, but probably closer to like 50 than 17. It seems weird that Larnach is that low.
I think it's the playing time, Scott. Not that it's been an issue yet, but if Buxton returns, it could be hard for him to stay in the lineup. So I think people might be worried about that with him. Though, look, again, if you have him in Keeper or Dynasty, he's flashed a little bit here. So I think they do have something. Some Monday hitter standouts, if there's anything that you guys want to talk about further, just feel free to interrupt. Alex Kirilloff has 5 hits in 4 games since returning from the IL. He's 80% rostered. That number should probably be closer to 100. Jared Kelnick destroyed his second home run of the season. It came off of Frankie Montas. Lourdes Gurriel went 3-for-5 with his third home run. He has 16 hits over his last 9 games. Ryan McMahon went 1-for-3 with his 12th homer. It was his third off of a lefty this season. Gene Segura went 2-for-5. Low-key, he's batting .331. Didn't even realize that, so shout out to Gene Segura. Anthony Santander returned over the weekend. He has 8 hits in 4 games since returning from the IL. He is 78% rostered. So a lot of people actually held on to Santander, who was great last season.
I need to see Ryan McMahon continue to hit well, you know, moving forward, because he's been like a 740-ish OPS bat so far in the month of 730-ish OPS bat so far in the month of May. I think his line now is .237, .298, .434, which is not that far off from what Ryan McMahon had been prior to April, really. He still had the better plate discipline, so that's a good sign. Mm-hmm. The strikeout rate stayed right around 21%, so that's a good sign.
And the fly ball rate, it looks like, has remained higher than, you know, that was a problem for him in the past, too.
But he's another one of those guys I'm having trouble ranking right now because, you know, I moved him up quite a bit in April, and I've kind of kept moving him up, even though in May he hasn't really deserved it. So I would feel a lot better if the next 2 weeks went well for him. And also I'll throw out, he was in the previous segment, but I think Amed Rosario might be a thing. I don't know if he's like a very good thing, but I think He's got 3 steals over his last 12 games. He's got a handful of multiple hit games in there. His expected batting average is like 270. I think in roto leagues as a middle infielder, I think he can be a reasonably useful option.
Some tidbits from starting pitchers on Monday. Brandon Woodruff, might as well bring him up, hour in, up against the Padres, 7 shutout with 8 strikeouts to 0 walks. He has a 1.41 ERA and a 0.70 whip. So Brandon Woodruff has been amazing. Trevor Rogers, he allowed 2 runs, 1 run. One of those was earned with 5 strikeouts over 5 innings pitched. Zach Eflin had a quality start, although he gave up 4 runs. Only 3 of those were earned. 6 strikeouts over 6 innings pitched. John Means, 7 innings, 2 runs, 5 strikeouts. The ERA is down to 1.79, though he has a 3.75 xFIP. And then Yusei Kikuchi, 6 innings, 1 run with 3 strikeouts against Oakland. And Frankie Montas on the other side, 6 innings, 4 runs, 11 strikeouts. His ERA is 4.92. I don't think Frankie Montas is a drop candidate, but I feel like we're kind of teetering there. Like he's on the fringe.
Yeah. He's really tough to figure out because he's missed he had 21 swinging strikes today. I don't know where that came from. 11 were on the splitter. The splitter has actually been more effective this year than it was 2 years ago, but everything's just so topsy turvy with him. His ERA and for May, entering this start, was 3.22, even though the swinging strikes were way down in May. And then, of course, he had this 21 swinging strike out. I don't know. He's just like, there's so many contradictions there. Remember in 2019, also, the ground ball rate was really high for Montas. The ground ball rate is very low for him now. So, yeah.
He just gets hit real hard. He might be like in the Kevin Gausman thing where he just needs to start throwing his splitter like 40% of the time. And until he does, it's just going to be really frustrating.
Yeah. Maybe.
He's outside of my top 60 pitchers now, starting pitchers.
I wanted to mention Trevor Rogers' velocity was down like 1.5 miles per hour today. It's not a problem unless it continues, but it's worth mentioning.
The call to the pens and bullpen updates for Cleveland. We figured James Karinchak would not be available on Monday, and he was not. Emmanuel Clase picked up his 8th save, though he did allow a single and 2 walks in a 1-run game. It was a little shaky. I'll leave it there.
His whip is really high, and it just got higher.
Yeah, for sure. For the Orioles, Cesar Valdez came on in the 8th with runners on 1st and 3rd in a 1-run game. He allowed 3 hits and 4 runs to come across. And Scott, I know we were talking before, and you said Valdez has been a little shaky in the month of May. I don't know if there's anybody else to target in the Orioles bullpen, but...
Oh, I was in the middle of looking it up, and I didn't finish it. I don't know either.
Tanner Scott was also bad today. Paul Fry has the best ERA in the pen, but you're talking about a 28-year-old lefty, so I don't think he's a closer candidate. And Tanner Scott has 16 walks and 18 innings, so that was coming into today. So I kind of think it's probably just Valdez.
I saw recently that Hunter Harvey, I think, is getting closer to returning, but... Obviously, he's dealt with a ton of injuries and inconsistency so far as well. For the Rockies, Carlos Estevez picked up his 2nd save with Daniel Bard being used on back-to-back days entering Monday. And it looks like Estevez might be the next man up if something were to happen to Daniel Bard, like him being extremely bad. For the Blue Jays, Jordan Romano struck out the side in the 9th in a tie game. Don't know if there's anything there, but I don't know why they don't just use him. He's been very good. For the Brewers, Josh Hader allowed a run but converted his 11th save of the season. So stream or not to stream for Tuesday, Logan Gilbert at the A's, Cole Irvin versus the Mariners, Andrew Heaney versus the Rangers, Garrett Richards versus the Braves, Tarek Skubal versus Cleveland, and Jake Arrieta at the Pirates.
Irvin, Skubal, Heaney.
Skubal, Heaney, Irvin.
For Wednesday, Johnny Cueto at the Diamondbacks, Merrill Kelly versus the Giants, Luis Garcia versus the Dodgers, Griffin Canning versus the Rangers, James Kerpillion versus the Mariners, and John Gant. If he's on the mound, I got to ask. He's at the White Sox.
Kerpillion.
Could we move one of Heaney, Skubal, or Irvin to Wednesday?
I like Kerpillion against the Mariners.
Yeah.
Yeah, me too. I know Griffin Canning's last start out was pretty bad, but Texas is not a bad matchup.
No, Yeah, and I don't really want to pick a third. I guess Luis Garcia against the Dodgers if I have to. I obviously don't like that matchup, though.
John Gant's just going to go out there and throw five innings and allow one run on three hits while walking four. He's just going to do it, guys. That's all he does.
That is officially the John Gant. You allow one run over five with four plus walks. That's a John Gant. We'll wrap up with some team name Tuesday. These are from David P for Pavetta.
Yep.
Matthew Boyd meets girl.
Sure.
From Terry. Bieber likes Romano. It's yummy. I don't get that one. I think this is a Justin Bieber has a song called Yummy. Is that what that is? I don't know. Well, Chris, you said yup very confidently, so I thought you knew what it was.
But I just wanted to move on.
Just because Romano is yummy. It's a great cheese.
That's very fair. From Jose, please yummy chocolate.
Yep.
That's a stretch.
Back from the Graveman.
I like it. This is the best one, though.
All rum is Goodrum.
That's very good.
From Jack, Karen check, baby check, baby 1, 2, 3, 4.
Sure.
These boots were Maeda for walking.
Yep.
And Jonesh weep the leg.
Yep.
From Sam, I have Corbin Burns and Yordan Alvarez on my dynasty team, and I'm debating between two team names. Can you help me settle on one? I'm between third degree Burns and our Yordan savior.
Our Yordan savior. It's a dynasty league. He's got a longer future.
I just think it's the better name too, so I would go with that one. From Nicholas, Mad Abadu.
That's very good. That's very stupid and very good.
From Ben, when I say you say Kikuchi.
Yep.
From Alex, Neris Bueller's day off.
Yeah.
Oh, you get two names in there in a way that actually doesn't muck it up.
It's pretty good. From Chris, not Towers, up Bichette's Creek without an Enor.
Nah.
Yeah, I think the last name, there's a better one. You got to find a better one there, but I like where you're headed.
Yeah, I like it too. I like the ones that try too hard, actually. Those are my favorites. From Alfonso, Gary Nate and Matt Olson.
It's like Gary Nate.
It's like Mary Kate and Ashley Olson.
Oh. Yeah, that's that. You need a good logo to kind of explain the team name. That's one of those situations.
Yeah. We'll work on that.
Yeah. I'm gonna throw one out here. Scott's wearing his Lost T-shirt. I finished Lost last night. I very much enjoyed it. Here's my team name: Live Together, Dime Alone.
All right.
That's a good one.
We're going to wrap there. For Scott and Chris, I'm Frank. Thank you all for listening and watching Fantasy Baseball Today. We'll be back again tomorrow. Bye-bye.
It's the UEFA Champions League on Paramount Plus. Europe's top club soccer tournament. Champions versus champions. The best teams facing off in the knockout rounds.
Magnificent!
And it all takes place
while you're filling out financial reports at work. In the middle of your day, in the middle of your week. So use that second screen. Call in sick. Do whatever you gotta do to tune in Tuesdays and Wednesdays. Nobody watches the UEFA Champions League like us. Stream every match live exclusively on Paramount Plus.